next miracle.
First, may I welcome those who have not been here again, and welcome everybody back. We had said we wanted to begin at 9 o'clock before. I think we'll leave the hour at 9, have our coffee for 5 minutes as we did today. Eventually we'll get started 5 minutes late. The mayor will be here shortly, right, Wes?
Correct.
That's one of the duties he has to perform this morning. We haven't heard from the other city councilman except, I think, Kirby, I think that he would not be able to be here today. Councilman Cobb, Mrs. Helen Cobb is here. Join us over here, Helen.
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. We postponed them. You know, we have a legislative committee meeting on Friday morning.
Every Friday morning.
Yeah. The committee meeting.
Yeah. Maybe we'll fit in with your legislative session sometime. The first item on the agenda today was to look at the calendar, you might remember, because we're going to run into some holiday conflicts. I have a letter here from Dr. Hall indicating may I read to you first the letter that went out concerning the calendar and then look at the calendar date. Does everyone have it in front of him? Did everyone receive it? The calendar, everyone received the calendar. Okay, the letter that went out was, dear councilman. Oh no, that's the calendar. Well, we'll just look at the calendar then. The future dates of the City Community Dialogue, October 13th, 27th, today is the 27th, November 10th, which is, I think, okay. Then we get into November 24th, and November 24th is the one where I think we might want to look at first and change because that's that Thanksgiving weekend. Thursday the 23rd is Thanksgiving. The 24th is that Friday. What shall we do about the 24th? So we'll move it to the next Friday, which would be the December 1. The next Friday is December 1. Yes, the 24th is the day after Thanksgiving. City holiday officially. Some of us will be off, and I'm sure everyone here will be enjoying themselves otherwise and do not want to talk about business on the 24th, even if they are sober at that time. Shall we move it then to December 1? It would mean perhaps that we'd have to really move all the days up, and that would probably take care of it. Because it would mean we'd be meeting two Fridays in a row.
Right.
Otherwise. John?
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if we could have a rediscussion of this whole twice a month, which means that we take out 8 hours. Not that anybody's that busy, but it seems that we have a diminishing audience here each week. And I'm sure that it's because they are put in other things as maybe they should. But I had suggested that maybe we think in terms of meeting 4 hours on once a month rather than twice a month. Then maybe we'll get the kind of quality. I'm only bringing it up for rediscussion if this is appropriate. We were just talking this morning about the diminishing people. And whether this would be possible to set it at once a month and make sure that everybody's here that we would like to have here.
This has come up again this past week, and John is bringing it up now also. There were some questions that we received concerning whether or not the persons invited felt it was significant enough to make the meetings on a regular basis. It's our concern too, and maybe it should be open for rediscussion. What is your pleasure about it? If we look at the roster of those that were invited and take a count on it, we find that many of the ones invited have not come at all. And as John mentioned, it's diminishing in terms of numbers of those people invited. Shall we open it up for discussion?
John, is this due to the twice a month meeting or the impact of the agenda? You see, this is not... what I mean by that, as long as you deal in generalities, you always get a crowd. But when you get out to specifics, they start dwindling away. And the people who the man stated last time were supposed to be involved and invited, they're not here, but they've been here every other time that we've met. So I don't know whether the meeting the twice a month will interfere with it or not. If you that's the agenda that I think will cause some of us to be away.
You hear that the when we get down to the
nitty gritty as you've been talking about, you're going to lose a whole lot of us. Yeah.
So we're really talking about then maybe it's the content as opposed to simply the price.
That's right.
Month.
That's right. I don't think there's a problem. We have one councilman here, and she's been absent before, but she's here now. And there are others that were here are absent today. So I don't know what the reason. This is just speculation. I don't know.
Looking at what the officer said, I suggest that since you do have the enrollment for each meeting, I suspect that what we're getting is alternating attendance, that people are not coming every time. They're coming one time, then miss one, then come, miss one. And you can very easily verify this by looking at your attendance sheet. If this is the case, then what John is saying might make sense, that people simply can't afford two meetings. And if we were meeting just once, we might get to be here at the same time. I'm just suggesting that you should check that. I'm not saying that this is true.
George?
I'm not sure, like the room, honestly, or not, that's the real reality as to why they're not here. Because I don't think there's any question in anyone's mind that the racial issue in this country and the Vietnam War are not the number one priority as it relates to the American people. People can't pay attention on the places where the priorities are, then there'll always be something else. I mean, there's always something else. There's always a better meeting. There's always another place to go. We all have other places to go. But the emphasis should be placed on what is priority. Now, not priority from a standpoint of what the individual feels himself, but it's priority from the standpoint of what is the impact of the community. You see, the long, hot summer now is over. So let's hell with it. We cool it until next summer. You see, that's another thought for dwelling people, you see. But we pacified you now. Everything's okay. Well, if this attitude is to be taken, then we'll be back in the summer again with the same problem. Everybody will be packing the room here trying to cool it off again.
I don't agree with that remark myself, speaking for myself only. And I'm representing standing and thinking the port. I feel that these meetings are a little bit long. And I feel that if we got these meetings, had them twice a month and started at 8 and got here and started, and quit at 10, you'd have attendance. But if you'd have a 9 o'clock meeting, I'm here at 9 o'clock and there are two of us here, and you start the meeting 35 minutes late, this wastes the whole morning. And I'd rather come here at 8 o'clock, get through at 10, then have a couple hours to do things which we have to do instead of taking the whole morning to this. I think we do just as much, and that twice a month then wouldn't be too much.
There's another element, John, that he's introduced, maybe the related to it, in the sense that if we could set it up so that we get here, particularly the individuals that you are really concerned about, too, if we could have those people here at 8, start at 8, 2 hours, thing, or whatever time is, get it over with. He's saying it's twice a week, twice a month, even for him, it's not too much.
I would agree, and my remarks are made in the spirit of pragmatism.
Right.
It isn't what we really, it isn't that we disagree in, it's what it is, and we have to deal with that, and that's the sense of which my remarks are made.
Right. Hamilton first, and then Leon.
Well, I think that you're developing a pattern of meetings, which is good. I think it's desirable to stay with it as to its frequency. I think that 2 weeks is a long enough break between discussion to preserve continuity, and whether you wish to go to a different hour, as the Admiral suggests, is a secondary consideration. I think it's desirable to keep the bi-weekly meeting.
Well, I was going to say the same thing.
You said
that's all about the continuity. I missed last week, 2 weeks ago, and I feel kind of out of it, you know. You feel as if something builds up and keeps going on the bi-weekly basis.
All right, then we... Yes, I would go either direction. I think there is some advantage to the continuity of 2 weeks. I do subscribe, though, to the change in hours. 9 to 12 is really an inconvenient time every 2 weeks. 8 to 10, or even 10 to 12, but 8 to 10 is a good time, in my estimation, personally.
Too early.
Yeah, it is. I don't find many meetings to get off the ground on time if they're scheduled for 8 o'clock.
Very few people have any intelligent thoughts before 9 in the morning.
Speaking for yourself.
You could wish to have a
before 9 this morning.
Could we have a simple vote on what is and get on, Carol, if possible?
All right, unless others have any comments. We have several ideas there, though, that tying in with George?
The point is very significant, Carol. We've discussed before that we should start the meeting at 9 o'clock, and this came up at the meeting before last, stating that we come here and we were doing this before, so this isn't the first time it happened. We've continued this, and this is very bad, because we have not, in almost 2 or 3 meetings, at least started at 9 o'clock. And this
just the one time, that's right. Let's look at then this morning. It was my chairman's decision that we did not have city councilman here, anyone from the mayor's office or manager's office, and therefore two or three of us were talking whether or not we should start. We waited. Do you think that we should have started at 9 anyway without them, or how do you see that? If we can't get exactly here, should we wait until they are here? Since today's meeting, for example, was specifically designed to involve a city council, do you think that we should start without, say, the body that's invited for that particular purpose?
If it's a specific body, Carol, if we're going to talk about transportation, for an example, well, then we should certainly have those people who can affect change in transportation. I agree with you on that. So that would be the only reason, say, for holding up a meeting, but just not enough people, for example, is not a reason for holding
right.
up.
But you can always talk about something else anyway. There are many issues.
Right.
We could start on an impromptu basis on something not on the agenda and
then move on.
Sure.
Sounds like a good alternative. Glenn?
Whatever time we start, I'd also like to speak in favor of beginning on time, partly because it seems to me that if you know the beginning time is flexible, then you are liable to yourself squeeze out a few more minutes. You know that it doesn't really begin on time, and you really don't want to spend that extra time just sitting. You'll try and do one more thing, one more phone call, one more letter, whatever it is, and then it's very easy to push that to half an hour. And if the meeting waits for half an hour, that's proof positive that you can squeeze out the extra half hour. So if you begin on time, if it's just you, and when they come in, they may feel guilty, and you hit it and say, that's it, and you're late, and we always begin on time. My feeling is that people begin to measure up to what the expectation is. You expect late, they get late. Fulfill it.
All right, the two of us will start on time, and we will get some of these impromptu items. That's good.
I'd like to move, Mr. Chairman, that we fix the time of starting the meeting at 9 o'clock, that we fix the time of adjournment at 11 o'clock, unless the body decides at that time to continue the discussion.
Second.
Then moved in second. Question?
On discussion of that, it seems to me you have an interesting situation here. At about 9:30, you had your room pretty well filled. It may be that a number of people, in order to make the morning meeting, are having to do things to squeeze them in between 8:30 and 9:30. And possibly a 9:30 to 12 meeting would catch your people in.
Any other discussion on the motion? He suggested that the time should be changed in from 9, that's what he's really saying, from 9 to maybe 12 instead of from 9 to 11. 9:30 to 12 as opposed to 9 to 11.
That's what the people seem to show.
Yes.
An amendment?
Well, you've got a substitute. Let me find out now. Were you making that a substitute motion yourself or just a part of the discussion?
That was part of the discussion at the non-minute.
The substitute motion takes precedence here. It's been moved and seconded that we change the hours from 9:30 to 12.
Promptly.
9:30 to 12.
Question
on the substitute motion. All in favor of the substitute motion?
Aye.
Opposes? Now back to the original motion. Begin at 9, and it will be 9:30 to 12. We will meet at 9:30 to 12 instead of from 9 to 11. Okay with you, Mr. Motion Maker?
Coffee will be available here at 9.
Coffee will be available at 9. Logically, we should remember that if the coffee's at 9 and get here at 9 and start at 9:30. We shall start at 9:30 then. If it's only two of us, we shall be talking when you come in that door. From now on, we shall be engaging in all these world issues or something, San Diego issues. Back now to the dates. We were saying that the 24th is the day after Thanksgiving.
I'd like to suggest that we start with December the 1st, as now agreed upon, I think, tentatively, and I have a new schedule that is on 2 weeks thereafter, which would be December 15th, December 29th, January 12th, January 26th, and so forth. And
right.
It would start a new cycle on a 2 week basis.
Yes, that would take care of our conflict in the holidays.
Right.
If we started on the 1st and moved to 2 weeks, as you just outlined.
Since you have a councilman here, can we find out how this conflict would be affecting the council?
The only fixed regular committee is legislative committee. It meets at 9 o'clock every Friday morning. But that only involves three councilmen, one of which has been here instead of at the committee meeting anyway.
Thursday is the city council meeting. Tuesday again. So we're left only with Monday and Wednesday if we talk about the day when the city council would not be committed. Is that correct?
Now the council as a whole is not committed on Friday, just three.
Just the three. We haven't been on Fridays.
We hear very regularly from our people who sit here.
All right. Then we shall move it then to December 1, 15th, and 29th. Any disagreements with the
In view of the holiday schedule, should we not have the meeting on the 29th? Stick with our 2 week meeting, but just
suspend that one during the Christmas week. There will be many who will still be out on the 29th, that whole week of Christmas.
Could we adjourn from the meetings on the last meeting on the 15th and then continue in January, which I believe Dr.
Yes.
Hall pointed out is
January 12th.
The 12th, I think.
In a disagreement with that, we will suspend the meeting on the 29th, which is the week, Christmas week, and pick up at the regular time, which would be January 12th. Then we shall revise the schedule and get one out to you. This shall be December 1, December 15th, and January 12th, and January 26th. Any other question on the calendar? We shall get that to you so you can have it in front of you. Would you take out the minutes, please, for the October 13th meeting?
or maybe we can run down rapidly and get on with the discussion. Are there any disagreements, remarks about the minutes? If not, would
Approve this mail.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that they approve this mail.
Question?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposes? Accepted. On page 2 of the minutes, we covered rapidly the using the model, the City Transit Company. Just for review for a minute or two, we talked about minority perceptions versus majority perceptions. At that time, we were still dealing with the model in terms of the differences in the perception as opposed to specific problems. On the second page, if you want to review there, they are there. On the left side, the minority perception, and on the other side, the majority perception. We moved on from that and decided then that from here on in, we would choose specifics. And turning then to page 4, we came up with the kind of guideline in these 4 dimensions here that we would use in pursuing these specific problems. And today, it was agreed upon by the group to look at the City Transit Company in terms of specifics. And the specific area was that of looking at the method by which the Transit Company Board was chosen, still with the idea that the perceptions of the minority versus the perception of the majority play a role in the reception, in the way that the Transit Company is received in the community or perceived in the community as well, and some of the problems that felt to be present with regard to the minority community. The City Council was invited, again, extended a special invitation to be here because we had agreed that we would not be talking about the employment today, nor say improvement of services, nor say the changing of the routes in southeast or northeast. We would not be talking about those areas. They would come up later, but would be talking about methods by which board members were chosen. We have only one city councilman here. We do have Mr. Place, who is representing the mayor until he gets here, and we do have assistant to the city manager here, and we have Ed Butler, city attorney, as well as, well, Don Keller had to leave for a funeral, he'll be back. It is now open to begin talking about the specific topic for today. And on page 4, we drew up an outline there that we could use if we wish in terms of getting at the problem. We don't have to stick to it. There's the mayor now.
Carol, you understand the structure of the transit operation in terms of the fuel pipeline?
Well, no, but some of us understand part of it, but that's why we're going to get into that today. You can tell us what the structure, maybe we should start off with that, what's the legal structure, and then as the mayor indicated that we can move on from there in terms of the selection process. Joe?
Because we need some individual perceptions from the council regarding their personal reasons for setting the criteria or selection as a result of the criteria set, is it quite fair to go into this subject now when we don't have these answers available to them? Because we'll find ourselves in the same old bag of trying to say what we think they thought. May we talk or have an alternate subject of interest, that we do have people here that can give us these perceptions.
Joe's suggestion that we suspend the topic per se because only one city councilman is here and use an alternate one today. George?
I was only going to suggest, I thought Mr. Butler was proposing that we might give some attention to the facts regarding the organizational structure.
The legal.
And I assume that councilmen that may show up later will have had this, but many of us, and I speak for myself, do not know, and I would like to have a presentation of facts, which might be very timely right now.
Yes. Well, I thought it was only, George, to suspend that part of it that would require direct answers from the council.
Incidentally, Edward was trying to suggest something specific here that the rest of us might not be aware of.
Right.
That is, Ed, do you want to start out by helping us understand the legal foundation?
You know, I was in budget with those tights, you can't have any shock.
Yeah, I need to
get that
closet.
Then just keep it out of sight. Yeah. Well, my background on this thing is that I was a member of the task force that the city council appointed 2 years ago to study public transit in San Diego in the alternative solutions to what was seen as a diminishing service, an increasing rate, and a breakdown in public transit in San Diego. The task force had Harry Scheidel as chairman, Jack Walsh participated, I was in it, Walter Hahn. I think that was the task force group. Out of that study, we came up with a recommendation to the city council that the privately owned company should be acquired by the city, and we then set out the alternative methods to do it. The San Diego Transit, the private company was here, that was called, I guess it was called Transit. Now that was one of five subsidiary corporations owned by a parent holding company called City Transit. City Transit is owned principally by the Hall family. And City Transit is a holding company.
George Hall.
It had five subsidiaries that included the San Diego bus line, included the Star and Crescent ferry that runs over to Coronado. It included the California Motor Express, which is the California's largest motor transit, motor express company, and two other corporations. But this was the one that operated the bus line in San Diego. In looking at how to acquire this thing, we had several ways to go.
Ed, just a correction. Jess Hall owned the San Diego Ferry Company, and Oakley Hall owned the Star and Crescent.
I met the one that goes to the Star and Crescent is the Nickel.
It is the Nickel Center.
Yeah.
They own the San Diego Ferry Company.
Thank you for that correction. I meant to say that the thing that goes over to Coronado that you wait 2 hours for, but our great good governor solved it with that new bridge. We had several ways to go on the acquisition by the city and putting into public ownership the matter of public transit. The first alternative was the city could acquire the thing directly and operate it as a department of the city. Now, as a department of the city, this would mean that the employees would then come under our classified service that to all intents and purposes would be a governmental operation. That was the first choice. The second choice that we had was to operate it through a joint powers agency that we could have created with another governmental entity. This would have created a separate entity with perhaps with various governmental powers. A third choice was setting up the nonprofit corporation leaseback arrangement. And through all of these decision-making processes the council had to go through was the overriding legal difficulty here of financing the acquisition. We negotiated in the summer of 66. Well, first of all, let me say this. The council, when we got the task force report to the council, they then made the legislative determination that the acquisition would be through a nonprofit corporation route. And that meant that the transit company would convey assets to a nonprofit corporation, which happens to be the San Diego Transit Corporation, which is now the legal entity which operates the bus line. That's a nonprofit corporation, the five members of which are appointed by the city council. So that's the transit company, and this is the operating company. These are the people that actually run the buses. Now, over here we created another nonprofit corporation, which is a leasing company. This is also a creature that was created by the directors of this corporation. The five directors of the San Diego Transit Corporation are the five directors of the San Diego Transit Leasing Corporation. We did this to afford a vehicle through which we could acquire this thing. The city cannot, absent a vote of the people, enter into a long-term obligation. However, a non-profit corporation isn't inhibited under the law in doing it. And that's basically the reason for the non-profit corporations to set up a financing technique through which we could acquire the bus line. We paid roughly $4 million for the assets of the transit company. And those assets, as a matter of interest here, were conveyed first to the leasing corporation. And the leasing corporation then, in turn, kicks them over to the transit corporation. And this operating company has an operating agreement to operate the bus line. This company, in effect, owns the buses. And the city sits off here with an agreement with all of them that compels and requires them to do certain things. And that briefly is, you could call this, I suppose, number one, the operator. Number two is the financial leasing corporation. We're talking about the selection of the directors from the majority-minority perception standpoint. You'll be talking about the selection of the five directors to corporation number one, which is the operating company, and they happen to be the same directors of the leasing corporation. This is simply a financial gimmick to enable us legally to set up the financing to acquire it. But you know, it was $4 million was the price. We got 50% grant from the Federals. We borrowed money from the First National Bank on a five-year loan. It was run through this corporation here, which is paid back over a period of 5 years. The company's then gone out and bought another 100 buses, which came up to $2.3 million, as I recall, which half of which is being met by the federal government. And this was just shot through with a very complicated financial transaction. I tell it only to you because if you're talking about majority perception and minority perception, you got to take into account that when you appoint directors of a corporation to which the political entity, the city council, hands over a bundle of governmental responsibilities and governmental authority, plus the right to tap the public purse for 10 cents on the special tax, which comes up to over $1 million, the decision as to the members of the board that you appoint is necessarily, in my judgment, going to be colored and affected by the business responsibility they have and the public responsibility they have and the overriding need to conserve the public money. We ran projections for 5 years out as to what it was going to cost to run this thing. And it turned out that we figured that there'd be a deficit of $1.8 million, assuming an increase in service and assuming a reduction in fares, these things being necessary to get people back into the buses to the end that congestion in the streets goes down and the public is better served. That $1.8 million deficit has been substantially reduced. The picture now is it's at $750,000 a year to pay off the debt to the First National Bank. We collect about $1.2 million on the 10-cent special tax for transportation. You take out the $750,000, and that leaves you, about $500,000. Now, the deficit that the company was anticipated to operate against was something like $700,000, which leaves us $200,000 in the hole. I'm only throwing these numbers at you to illustrate that this operation here, unless it's carefully managed and efficiently managed, and smartly managed by its board of directors, can be an absolute rat hole for public funds, because we now have the absolute obligation to keep this thing going. And to the extent that they need more than $1.2 million from the city, then the difference is going to have to come out of general tax money. And general tax money is very tough to come by against our general fund. By way of further illustration, the recent contract negotiations with the unions, which the board of directors were required to go into immediately the city made the acquisition, resulted in substantial increases in salaries to the members of the operating union members on this thing here. The first year, it comes up to $450,000
as you might give a little bit of background on those union negotiations, that the transaction between the previous company and the union was held up for about 2 or 3 years pending this transfer, and so we got hit with a whole bunch of accumulation.
What? As you know, this negotiation was started in early 1966. The company quite properly postponed negotiations with the union, and they kept their old contracts open-ended and gave small incremental increases to keep peace in the family. So that when we came in and acquired it, there had been filled up 2 or 3 years of dammed up union demands and needs for increases. So when the transit board stepped in, they were immediately had to negotiate and did negotiate a contract that cost $450,000 the first year, and over a 3 year period, it's going to come up to well over $1 million in increased costs per year. Again, looking at this the first year, and again looking at the $1.2 million of tax monies, looking at the $750,000 we have to pay back every year, you could put this on top, and right off the bat, you've just used up all your tax monies this year, leaving nothing for increased service and lowered fares, with this exception that this present board and the present management has turned this thing around in 3 or 4 months. They're showing a profit. The thing is completely in the black. It seems to be performing a service which is beyond our expectations. As a matter of fact, ridership is up 10.8% against our projections of 6%, which the experts in Washington told us were wildly optimistic. And this thing is coming around very smartly. Carol, summing this thing up, and we could talk all morning about the background of this thing, summing up the San Diego Transit Corporation is a nonprofit corporation. There are 5 directors appointed by the city council. The city of San Diego is the sole member of this nonprofit corporation. The city, acting through the city council, has the right to replace any director for cause. Now, you ask, well, why does that right have to be for cause? Why can't we dismiss them without cause? Once again, going back to a political decision, when this thing was put together, there was on the books for the Mills-Schrotty Transit District proposal, which would have created a governmental authority in San Diego comprised of the 5 cities, which would have had the power to tax and would have had the power to acquire the assets of the company here and would have set up a transit district through which public transit would be run. For a number of reasons, this city council and the city councils of the other 5 cities concluded that this was not the way to do it, which is why we went this way. But as a matter of the politics of the thing, to bring peace to the warring factions here, and Frank will recall as well as I do what was going on there, that to get the people supporting the transit district approach to support this approach, we had to say to them that the directors, when they were appointed, could only be removed for cause. This was to suggest that the city of San Diego wasn't going to be completely in charge and control over a metropolitan system that extends into at least 5 cities and throughout the unincorporated areas of a large part of the county. So the directors are 5. They can only be removed by cause by the city council. They serve a term of 4 years on a presently staggered basis. They elect their own chairman. They have no compensation. They have, however, the right to vote themselves, as I remember, $50 a month for attending meetings. They have not done so. They haven't taken any expenses at all on this thing. The city's control over the operation of this thing by council policy is limited to the budget. The city has no control over routes. It has no control over rates. It has no control over working conditions. It has no control over employment or unemployment. All of these operating decisions and management decisions and policy decisions are vested in this board of directors of this nonprofit corporation here, who can only be removed by the city for cause. Our control ultimately lies in the fact that they have to come to us with their budget. And if we approve the budget, which includes, of course, this $1.2 million in taxes, and our control is over the budget, and here the council at the annual budget meetings will carefully look at their operation here and can exercise, legally at least, the control through the budget. Indirectly, I suppose, as a matter of politics and group relationships in any event, the council exercises a control over the operation indirectly or imperceptibly or inarticulately or even subconsciously. But at least in legal terms, that's the way the thing shapes up.
In that minute, Ed, maybe there's some questions be directed to that on that phase of it. Right?
From your presentation, it seems clear that among the qualifications for the members of the board was number one, business acumen, or what whatever that means. But did I also gather from what you said that there was some attempt to have the five members be representative of the geographic areas of San Diego? Well, now, in addition to those two things, can you think, are there other qualifications that the council had in mind? Because you know what my question is going to be is if that was representation of the areas, it seemed that the council should have called a representation.
I don't mean to suggest representation of geographical areas. Why did we say five? As you know, the city council consists of 9 members, the planning commission consists of 7, the stadium authority is 9, the board of supervisors is 5, and why did we select 5? We selected 5 because it seemed that a group such as this would be more integrated. That's not a great word, do you? It seemed to us that a group of 5 would be a better group to work and to handle this thing. Let me just add this, and this is my personal observation, and the mayor and the council can speak for themselves, that in putting this thing together and keeping in mind the political strength of the Mill Schrodi group, and particularly through Cecil Sparling down in Chula Vista, were very anxious to put this district thing together to the end that a political compromise could be reached. At least one member of the board had to come from the group sponsoring the Schrodi Mills legislation in the district. And I think it's no particular secret that George Scott was working for the transit district concept here, and George Scott, accordingly, was obviously a guy that you had to put on the board. Then you looked at the other elements, and looking again at the money, and it's the public purse you protect here, you obviously had to have a banker on the board, a guy who was real smart about banking. So Malin Burnham and Siner of the Union Bank come to mind. Then you needed somebody who had really done a lot of work with unions, who was very active in management of a business of an expanding nature, and then you think of the contracting industry. And then you thought, more perhaps most important, communications. How could you get a vehicle going here that could be so promoted, could be so jazzed up, that would get you and me out of our cars and we'd be taking a bus? Who'd come up with ideas about a mini-skirted hostess serving martinis on the way home from work, or coffee and donuts in the morning, helicopters, walkie-talkies, and all of these minibus things? You needed somebody in the communications field who was promotion-minded and who knew how to work through TV and newspapers and so forth, and that suggests Clinton McKinnon to you. So when you think of the, and again, these are my observations, the way I would have approached it, how they approach it is for them to say, but you need banking, you need business, you need communication, and you need the political compromise of the guy on the other side. Now, that's what I'm suggesting to you could be the way you get to select these board members.
That answers my question. The next question, of course, would be not directed to you. It would be asking the council, why didn't they need somebody who would have the interest of the majority of the riders in mind?
Beautiful. Right.
This is what the crux of the question is. How did you think about representing every possible thing except the people who are going to ride the bus? I'm not asking you that. That's the question we want to ask.
You're assuming. I guess your question assumes that these 5 people don't.
Well, they don't ride buses. Bankers don't ride buses. We know that.
Let me be precise.
Unless they, for publicity reasons, Mexican Americans and Negroes and other poor people right
now. Well, I guess you're now to the point of view that the thing you want to do.
Yeah, we should.
Let me have a question for you, Ed. Keep the other question that just was opened by Mac in mind for a moment. Let's hold that for a second, for that is nitty gritty. Yeah. Ed, if he has any other, do you have any other specific questions for him on this side of it?
Well, what I want to say is now that the community knows that we have a transit system here, they automatically will try to bring all the complaints and things right here to the city council, right? And yes, they won't.
We don't think it'll be automatic, and this is why, at least in my opinion, we've gone to great pains to make an arm's-length relationship. The thought being, I'll reflect my viewpoint, maybe Harry Scheidel's, and I think some of the council, thought being that the city council chamber and the office of the city councilman is not the place to fix routes, it's not the place to fix fares, it's not the place to work out management policy decisions having to do with the operation of the bus line. And this was thought to keep it out in an independent agency as autonomous as possible, with the one control exercised by the city is the budget.
But the community doesn't know that, does it?
I don't know. We may be living in this forest so much that all we're seeing are the trees. I can't answer that.
We'll get back to your question, I'm sure, on this other level. Any other questions to John?
I'd like to ask Ed if the council can be a redressing authority in regard to mismanagement or things that might happen or affect people. Would the council be the last council of last resort, redressing agency?
Well,
from a legal standpoint.
Legal contemplation, as I say, you can only, these board members are appointed for a term of 4 years. They can only be removed for cause. And if you can't remove them for cause, then presumably they're in control of the operation. And the only ultimate control the city has is through the budget. And if the thing is not managed in terms that the city council thinks is appropriate, then, of course, the $1.2 million, which we can levy through our tax here, may not be levied, and the whole thing, then, is in difficulty. That's the answer I could give you to it.
In other words, just to do that just one more step. In other words, if, hypothetically, the transit system went on a very discriminatory basis in any fashion toward people, toward employment, where could the community go? Would they have to go and get a redress of grievances?
Well, again, answering that question from a legal standpoint, that the terms of the grant that we got from HUD, Housing and Urban Development, includes a very strong, a very stringent, a very comprehensive anti-discrimination section. That section of no discrimination of race, color, creed, or national origin, employment, or any facet of its operation is imposed as a matter of law upon this corporation, upon the city, and all parties to this transaction. So this is federal law now. This is the federal anti-discrimination policy of the president. And if we or these corporations violate those conditions, we stand in great difficulty financially with the federal government. Obviously, an action would lie in the courts to redress the discrimination in practice. So it's not necessary. So you say, where's the recourse? Well, the recourse would be an action under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 against the corporations. Probably not the city, because we just aren't participating in the management. But and the FEPC, the California Fair Employment. But of all public agencies, these two nonprofit corporations, clearly as a matter of law, as a matter of contract, are bound by very tight anti-discrimination paragraphs.
But asking you, Jonah, you are on another level with the actual citizen who feels that there has been malpractice. What does he do on a pragmatic basis?
That too, which he didn't answer, and I was going to reserve it for later, possibly.
Well, if I could perhaps answer that, again, the five-man directors of this corporation, people to whom the public may address communications and grievances, the manager of the thing is the obvious repository of any complaints. And it seems to me that
don't know whether this is happening or not, but if there are any charges or allegations, certainly they should respond to them.
Well, Ed, history has shown us that this is not always the case, that he is not always sensitive to these kinds of things, and people have had to try to go a rather circuitous route in order to accomplish the objective. Take the airport situation, for example, just as one recent one, and that is really the context in which I was asking the question. Often the manager is insensitive.
All right, I saw several hands. Let's see if I got them in order here. Glenn and then Hamilton, George and then Joe.
I'm not too sure about what the status is in of the city council now in relationship to this corporation. In a sense, they gave birth to the thing. Now is it a child all of its own? In other words, the city council now can't go back and say, well, we thought five was a good live number, but it hadn't turned out not to be, and you'd be better off with seven. There isn't anything they can do about that. I mean, that's not under ordinance, so they could change.
It's a matter of law. We're the sole member of the corporation, and we could change its articles of incorporation and change its bylaws and increase the number of directors as a matter of law. Again, as a matter of policy, whether the council chose to do so would be
right.
A better decision.
So it's not in
oh, no, this is nothing. This is frozen in perpetuity.
Okay.
How is the basic charge to the directors expressed? It seems to me it would be quite conceivable that the five directors could, feeling that they had a grave financial responsibility, devote themselves to producing such a financially wholesome operation that the service to the community declined or was extremely limited. Or on the other hand, they could move in the direction of providing what in their judgment was a desirable degree of service, but at the expense of the financial soundness. What is the basic charge to them as to what kind of public transport they are to provide, the basic degree of public service?
There isn't a charge in a specific sense, like a charge of these people coming directly from the city to them saying, you shall do A, B, C, and D, you'll give first priority to service and so forth. But there isn't a charge in that sense. You construct their obligation to the community to provide public transit through three sources. The first is the HUD grant itself, which again is a matter of contract. The application for the HUD grant recited the need for improved service and lowered fares. It recited the need to maintain public transportation, and it recited the fact that it couldn't be done through private sources, but had to be done through this technique here. The federal money was given on the express assumption and obligation on our part, which is their part, because they're parties to the contract, that they would provide maximum public transit in the largest sense of the word. That's the first source, and it's in not clear cut crystal terms. The second source is the operating agreement, which we have with this company here. The operating agreement, in turn, requires them to maintain service and requires them to maintain a public transportation system, again not in specific terms, but within that operating agreement, as you notice in the papers, they've already increased routes, they've already lowered fares, but they also have it in their power at the end of 6 months, if the thing isn't going right, to change the concept. The third place we'd have it is in the lease agreement itself, which again sets up the public transportation, but answering you specifically, there is not a clear-cut crystal direction from the city to the board of directors, because consistent with a philosophy which underlies this whole transaction, the whole concept was to set up an autonomous public body of these five directors to take over, to run, and to handle the transit thing. Now that's a statement, as you know, the way groups work, that's perfectly clear that in the event the directors did do nothing but make a profit thing and have one bus running a day, for instance, it's perfectly clear that the five directors would be in here talking to the city council and the guys would get the message. But this is...
They've been listening to the city council.
now. They'd be getting a direction here, and it's perfectly fair. You spoke of three channels through which they receive support, and the evaluation would be exercised by three sources. And the HUD, there would be an HUD evaluation, I presume, of some sort, inasmuch as funds flow from that source. There is an evaluation from the city in that the city contracts with them, and obviously the city must then determine whether their
right.
contract is being met or not, and under the terms of the lease there's an evaluation.
That's right, and also the budget fixing conference when they come up and ask for the tax monies to subsidize the operation or to aid the operation. At that point the city gets a thoroughgoing comprehensive review of it legally. Of course, the matter, as you know, as a matter of fact, is discussions go on constantly with the directors and with the city.
Yeah, there's also one additional facet there, that the citizens themselves have set certain limitations in setting the 10-cent override.
Yeah.
They set a maximum within which they can do the things that were spelled out either directly into the various instruments or in the concept of the organization of things by not to exceed 10-cent override on the tax rate. If they get to the point of the 10-cent override, they've got to go back to the citizens for additional approval. So there is a direct limitation imposed by the citizens themselves in the vote of a year ago, June. So they're bound on one end by some limitations, and they're bound on the other end by an avowed purpose. Now they have to operate within these two limitations.
It's real easy. You can figure the frame. You go 8 million passenger miles to 12 million passenger miles. We know the outer limits of money to do this, and we know what the limits of money are here. As soon as you approach this, the 1.2 million is shot. If you back up here, at some point along here, you'll know exactly what economically you can do. And as the mayor points out, there is built in, through the 10-cent tax override, just how much service you can give. And the extent and the cushion that we hope to get out of this thing is that Sparkler and these directors and their business operators will keep moving this thing out towards the increased service and the lower fares and still stay within that $1.2 million. I emphasize this and continue to emphasize it, which I guess is what you'd call, a majority perception of the problem?
Right.
All right, speaking candidly of it.
That was George. Mac. All right, Joe.
Getting away from reality and facts for a minute. I sat here and listened to Ed talk, and I was getting a perception of what he was saying. And I was listening to the man, and through the whole thing, I seemed to get an undertone of a couple of things. First of all, that... Now, this is my perception. No one else may share this. First of all, that the people involved in selecting these gentlemen on the board did not feel that minorities had financial responsibility of the city at heart, and they could not hold the job for that reason. I also got the feeling that regardless of what the background of the minority might be, versus the background of the people that were selected, they could be equal. But again, this was not a consideration because no one quite felt that the minority had this type of color background. And knowing something about the corporations, having a little dealing with them, and having knowledge that certain directors or directors should have a certain financial statement to compose a good statement for a corporation to obtain one. I'm wondering if this was one of the ideas in mind, that it was a cumulative statement of each individual that composed a total statement that allowed the board to get financial, or who actually had this sort of thing. I mean, I'm getting this is me individually.
Yeah.
This is my perception. Again, I think that the total selection was based upon the invisibility of the minority.
Well, I can't respond to that. I would only.
I know you can't answer.
I would just say to you that in the 3 years in which I've been intimately associated with this thing, in the private ownership, in the transition to public ownership, and in the public operation, to the extent that I thought about this, that there's never crossed the concept of the minority groups or a minority person serving on this board here, that I'd say to you that my thinking has been dedicated solely towards how best to organize and run this from the standpoint of public trust and public responsibility.
That's what I get in.
It might have, no question about it.
It automatically, what is your frame of reference in thinking?
Well, Joe, may I interrupt? That's what we're going to get in. I think we're already now out of his area. I think we're back to what Mac was asking also,
right,
and what was implied over here.
Right.
If I may, Ed, thank you. Any other questions to Ed on the legal section? Now I think, Joe, we can go back to your question, Mac's question, and the question over here from somebody. Mac, would you want to now rephrase your question
to Joe? Really help in this thing, could we have a chart? Because we can start using this chart on this particular area of it.
Does anyone want to make any notes on these figures on the board?
Because I think we're going to get a perception.
All right, you want to team us up there then? Sure. Mac, we're back to you. And
well, I think I can just say again what I make the observation I made earlier, and that is that it seems that what happened was that every possible skill was utilized in setting up this board, that the council seemed to have been very careful to bring into it such skills that were necessary for efficient and effective operation of the corporation. But they missed one kind of interest, I said, and that's the interest of people who are going to buy the services. Now, everybody remembers some of the cities where this same mistake was made, Montgomery, Alabama, for example, where people simply wouldn't buy the services because of the fact that the operation of the thing was not did not coincide with their feelings of self-respect and dignity. That can happen anywhere, and I was just saying that maybe this was a mistake, that there should be somebody who was tuned in to what do the people think about who buy this? What do the poor people think about? What do the Mexican Americans think about? What do the Negroes think about who really rides this thing, you see? And that was the observation that I wanted to get into.
This is why we're really talking about it today. We're putting that in proper perspective, the perceptions of the minority versus the perception of the majority in terms of what we had on the board, selection of board members.
Mr. Chairman, what I have in my mind is would be unpopular to the minorities, but I'm going to say it anyway. First of all, I want to commend the maker of the presentation, because our subject on the agenda is dealing with the selection of board members to the public transit. And I don't see any other way that it could have been done. And we might as well be realistic in this thing. To go into a $4 million or $6 million project, you need men that stand for something or to get it going. Now, my only concern is now that we are off the ground and we're going. As I raised the question before, I would like to see some minority people driving these buses and in these offices. Maybe they're there, I don't know. But I haven't seen any driving the buses. Now, when you go to this point of what the minorities think about it, we are the only ones here that are actually going into this whole thing. The average run of the people out there, and we might as well be realistic about it, are not concerned about it, as long as they can get to work and get back home. But we as community leaders feel that there should be a little coloring of the thing. I don't know, I don't think the union, I guess it's under the, what is it, Teamsters Union? It's driving these buses.
Bus drivers union,
which is a part of the Teamsters Union.
No,
it's in the
district. Well, does this thing have any discriminatory clauses in the hiring practice? This bus drivers union. Well, big one.
I was wondering when they pulled away from Teamsters, because when I drove a bus as a member of Teamsters.
They're independent now.
They're independent. They're not part of the
They're
team.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, they are.
Well, now, this might be the problem of the reason that there are no minorities driving the buses in. And then if that be the case, then we have a gripe under the FEPC, under this grant that you were speaking about a moment ago. You have to go back to the top and see if the whole system is compliant with the philanthropic practice.
Well, we still have to be careful now today. We have to decide, we've already decided that we're not going to talk about the employment practices yet because other people should be here when we're talking about the hiring and all of this. We have to stick to those areas that we've already agreed upon.
And that's the selection of the board members, right?
Yeah, on that level. That's
well,
level.
From the previous, as I said, now this is, I'm only speaking for myself, and maybe my perception was a bit cloudy, but as far as the board is concerned, selection of the board members is concerned, from the way it was presented, with the political ties and the financial obligations that are would have to accompany this board. It's crystal clear to me. I have no rights.
But some others might and
me. Oh, I'm not stopping. I said this is me and it might be unpopular.
All right, we have George first and then Leon.
Right. Carol, on the, I have to go back to the board here again because Ed mentioned some of the determinations and decisions that are made by the board or by the cooperation. That is on rates, routes, and operation. Now, the two top ones to me is rates and routes of the bus. I know for a fact that many minorities supported this bill which brought about the city transit district here because the amount of bus service or the adequate bus service was not available in Southeast San Diego. And the cost of this bus company could not make this service available in certain areas because of the cost to operate this bus system. This is what led to the necessity of the city taking it over in the first place. Now, since we have this necessity, I'm concerned about dollars and cents, too. I'm concerned about the people who know how to manage money should be the people to run to manage this. But the point was of carrying this thing over, the last bus company knew how to manage money. That's why they cut out the bus service in Southeast San Diego, because they were managing money. Now, I wasn't trying to get another cooperation to be a good money manager. I was trying to get a cooperation which could provide better service for the people who needed the service. Like he said, the Mexican Americans and the black people in this city, not money managers. Now, since rates and routes are one of the two important things they handle, there's no way in the hell that the commission that's on there now can manage this route system because the people are not on that board who know the rates that should be charged and who have the conception of the routes that should be used.
All right, Leon?
Well, I'm a little bit, I think there's an element of the traditional pattern that we're sort of talking about. And I'll use an analogy. People in the majority group can make mistakes. You know, they can make a mistake managing Convair and it can practically go down. They can lose millions of taxpayers' dollars. And generals can make mistakes. Admirals can make mistakes. They aren't minority people for the most part. And it costs the taxpayers a lot of money when they make mistakes. What I will see in this thing is our effort to avoid making mistakes that might cost the taxpayer some money, which in a way says that we're maintaining the status quo. We want people on there who are nice and safe. We're going to keep things the way they are. We're not going to lose any money to the taxpayer. Even if it means not meeting the need, not achieving the purpose for which the thing was intended. And I think that in the situation that we're facing, in the issues that we're talking about, face this whole nation now, we ought to be willing to lose a little of the taxpayer's dollar, because it means doing something for people. Really, the only thing that people act for, seems to me, in any time, the only reason to have any human activity is to create human comfort. It's the only reason we put the carpeting on the floor and put lights on the ceiling and put air conditioning in buildings, and all the things that we do are aimed at creating human comfort of some species. And if it costs us some money to create some human comfort and to get more people involved, it seems to me it's all right. And it seems to me that we ought to have somebody, or ought to have had, and still ought to have, somebody on this transit board who can speak for and represent some of the people who maybe don't have very much money, but who are parts of the society, and they do contribute to it even though they don't have money, because they, producing low-cost labor, do contribute to the wealth of the community, even though they don't pay very much in taxes, because the wealth that is created in large measure by the efforts of these people who don't get very much money for it.
John, over here.
First of all, I have to agree with Reverend Oxley in that Mr. Butler gave an excellent presentation, and I can understand why the trustees were chosen in the way they were, and I believe that the people that set about setting up this commission did so on the basis of ability and not whether a person was a member of the minority or the majority community. I think this is exactly the point. When people go about setting up commissions, they don't think about the minority community. I think we're constantly contributing to this whole concept of the invisible poor, the invisible minorities. The idea never seems to permeate the majority community that somewhere, maybe out in San Ysidro or in Vista, there's somebody named Martinez that just might be capable of doing the job. There's somebody down on Ocean View or on Franklin Street that knows a little bit about routing buses or even about financial matters and banking. I mean, certainly we have Negro millionaires in this country, and we have Mexican-American millionaires. There may not be many of them, but they're there. And I think we have to address ourselves to this type of thinking. We have to have people from the minority community on these boards so that they can temper the idea of efficient service and saving the taxpayers' dollars with the human element. With getting back to what Max said, the idea that these people ride the buses and they should have some say in the operation, and that these people are becoming more and more aware and more cognizant. And then I have to get back to what was said earlier. The long hot summer is over, so we tend to forget about these things. I don't think we can.
That's about all that.
Admiral, then John, then Joe.
Well, first of all, I want to say to you that I'm living on a portal. Last week, I rode the bus. And I'm very happy that here is Butler's presentation, and I agree that this is probably the most sensible thing to do in order to get what we want done in the best way. I think that I thought when I voted for the transit that I was going to help subsidize the transit company so that it would provide better service for everybody who wants to use buses. And I would suggest that since we're now on a bind with these people appointed for 4 years and they can't be removed except for cause, why not suggest that there be an advisory committee set up composed only of people who ride buses in all areas of this city. Now, when I rode the bus last week, there was an older woman there who had found out that they had expanded the evening service out to Pacific Beach. She was very happy about this, but no one pointed out to her that this was on a 6-month experimental basis, and if it didn't pay off, well, then they would have to change it. So I get the impression here from the minority people that you feel that you're the only ones who are cognizant of what's going on and only ones riding the buses. there are others of us who still ride buses and who would like to have decent service and service not every hour, but it may be every half hour or every 20 minutes.
All right, John?
Yes. First, I'd like to echo, as a pragmatic matter, Admiral Hartman's suggestion. As an individual, but I'd also like to go back to something that Ed said, and which is really the logic question, touching on things that many people have said. Ed brought out a very interesting point. He said it was politically feasible for us to get someone from down in the South Bay area, at least representing some interest in that particular transit district matter. And I think that in 1968 in San Diego, it is just as politically feasible that some consideration be given to the other factors, such as other people riding the bus, in order that we might resolve this invisibility question, which keeps coming up time and again, that in order for us to give assurance that this is a democratic city, with a democratic outlook and an involvement of all countries, that it might well be, and I don't know whether you would want to expand the board. As an individual, I could go along with the presentation and the reasons the council did what it did. But if I acted as a catalyst in the community to bring to the attention of the power structure or whatever, of some of the reasons for the problems we are having, I would have to say I would disagree with just closing it down to five and maybe add an additional two. But if this is not possible, then we might well go back to the advisory board. But there has to be a resolution of the invisibility question.
All right, Joe?
To get back to actually what is, I think Ed can answer this question. I think this might get us all out of a hole also. In the selection of these directors, was their financial statement a factor? And I'm wondering if we do say that, or if you do agree that some minorities, or someone at least knowledgeable of the problems in minority areas, is put on the board, would they also have to have a financial statement?
No.
So much.
I
think it was not a financial situation, and they have to build up a total statement for the whole corporation.
Oh, no.
Okay, fine.
No, I think Frank answered those two questions earlier to try to
write
it down.
No.
All
right. So we're not out of the bag.
No.
Okay. We're still in the bag.
Glenn?
Well, let me just say that when people begin to mention one of the ways of confronting what I think is a very real problem, and which is really getting at the heart of what some of the real difference of perception is, when I hear the proposal set forth that we'll have an advisory committee, which is a way of doing it, I immediately begin to feel like it's getting back to the idea of a second-class citizenship. You create a place where people really make decisions, and then you create a second-class status, which is advisory. And it's this type of thing which I feel is should be studiously avoided as a way of resolving the problem. If it's going to be directly confronted, then what needs to be done is not to bring in people to advise those who really make the decision, but to put them in the place where the decision is really made. When that's being done, then if there are all kinds of ways you want, after you've got that piece of the power, then if you want advisory committees or a better liaison with the community, there are all kinds of ways you can do it. But as a way of resolving the primary problem, I really feel that this is only going to inflame matters. It's only going to make people feel that there are two rooms. There's a room where the decision is made, and there's the other room where the talking is done. And that oftentimes, one is simply window dressing to be able to keep the other people at bay while the real decisions are made for things which have very little to do with that talking room.
Right, let me see if I can stop then and see if we've got all these things here. What I hear is that we are really talking about what we intend to talk about today in several ways here, namely that the invisibility factor operates such that the decisions are made, from what I hear, with the
with the major orientation that of problem solving as having been defined already by Ed, for example, and by others. The problem was, in terms of those dimensions you mentioned, financial considerations, the political considerations, the other considerations. Last week, then, we decided that this should be listed as one of the factors over here in terms of how problems are really perceived by the majority. That if this is the way they are solved, if the orientation is in terms of problem solving, it will generally mean that it will be majority, and that they are made without then regard to race as a factor. And the minorities are saying still that regardless of how that decision is made, there should be a conscious consideration in terms of race, else we remain over here and perpetuate the invisibility of the community. In this instance, those who certainly are going to be using the services would again be invisible. I hear Glenn saying the same thing, basically, that the invisibility of the minorities, again, would operate such that they are not part of that policy decision-making body, and that, again, the invisibility is a factor. I also heard Admiral Hartman, for example, when he mentioned the lady was riding, and she was so pleased that now they had this service. But she had not been informed of some data or information. She was not aware that really that was on an experimental basis. So in 6 months, if the decision is to stop that, then the dissemination of that data would certainly play a factor that maybe all of us ought to be aware of the fact that some experimental things are operating. We talked about this last week, and at the end of this we had public media, you might recall, a vehicle, something but a vehicle, using all the vehicles possible. So I think we're pulling together all these things that we'll keep in mind where we're going, namely that the problem, and we should get to that shortly, should be now restated very soon in terms of what we're really talking about. Kurt?
It seems to me that there's a built-in factor here about business, which does say that we seek to avoid deficit. At the same time, human values the human element is not being met. Would it be helpful? Does invisibility involve the human value versus the business, political, economic conflict that we're hung up here with? Because if you don't have the money to operate, somebody's going to be hurt. And so I think there's a conflict here between human values and business values.
And I have two comments, one director-related comment just made, and then the other one I wanted to move into. As I perceive it, this design assumed that there would be the investment of public money in the form of up to a 10-cent tax for concern primarily for human values. So I think there already was a commitment that it wasn't going to show a profit, it would show a reasonable deficit in order that we could improve service for all concerned. In part to help individuals who had to get from here to there, in part to help business that wanted to have people move to the places where goods were sold, in part industry to get here. We wanted efficiency, but in human values, and we also were concerned with better service. And collectively, we said, we're willing to spend tax money to improve this. So then there is a second factor, which is the matter of efficiency, and we're trying to balance between the two, as I perceive it. Now,
I'll carry one step, but I think that my concern here primarily was that perhaps politically, people don't buy deficits very well. And the notion that something, going back to Leon's concern over here, the notion that something is going to be deficit may not be acceptable in the majority frame of reference, but in order to render and meet the human need, the majority image needs to be inclusive of a kind of deficit in order to meet.
Oh, well, I think both the majority and the minority accept
rejected a deficit by voting the 10%.
Right, exactly.
And very definitely the majority had to accept it.
Right.
You wouldn't have had that unless they had accepted it.
But is it or not?
I think we keep coming back to this point, which someone is evidently missing, Carol. Why the city took over the transit district in the first place. I think that continues to be continued to miss. They didn't take it over to make money for the city. I think that's continued to be missed here. That's why the human element here is a part of this factor here in coming in. It has to be a part of this because that's why the change took place in the first place, was because of a human element.
Ed, did you want to come in on that?
Yes, we, as you know, we're with a lawsuit on this thing, which was another one of the vexing problems we had. That lawsuit attacked our power to engage in public transportation as a municipal corporation. It put into issue, in the lawsuit, these human values you're talking about. We argued the case and said that we can only justify public ownership of a private transit company and go into areas that have been considered reserved for private enterprise and into which government ought not to go. We can only justify it on the basis that we are about to provide and indeed have the obligation to provide a service to the citizens. That service is very like, I argued to the court, and we won the case, as you know, is very like police and fire and water and sewer and schools and other essential governmental services. And we reason that in this 20th century, as the city is growing, as urban problems develop, that our powers to go into these areas are commensurate with the need. And where the need exists to serve the citizen and to provide a public service, then we have to have the power, and the court agreed. And it seems to me that it answers conclusively this concept that there's human value shot through this thing, and you're quite right, implicit in the whole deal. At the outset was the need of the service and the meeting of human need.
Do I hear, though, this? Do I hear that, regardless of what all these are, there's an absence of minority persons right now? On the level,
let's don't use the word minority.
Is that what I'm
hearing?
I don't
think it should be specifically minority persons per se, Carol, because I think this is a very good point that other people in this part of the city ride the bus too. But we're speaking of the persons, the users, whether it be Mexican American Filipinos or little old Caucasian lady in tennis shoes. We're talking about people who use the service as a missing element here, not necessarily minorities. Certainly we're taking into consideration your minorities because this was the main factor with the lack of service in the minority community what brought about the bus change.
Yes, the service to
Leon.
I wanted to just clarify something. I hope that what I said wasn't viewed as lack of comprehension of why the vote was taken in the first place. It was only the magnitude of it, that is the limitation, or the size of the risk that we apparently are willing to take. That's the only thing I was arguing, that we're willing to take too small a risk in the area of improving human comfort. And with respect to the minority members on the board, this would seem to reduce, or not having them would tend to reduce the size of the risk. That was the point at issue in my argument.
Right.
I think there's a real danger here when people in a group like this begin to look at something. There's a real danger that they will look at it in terms of its original function, and they will fail to see other dimensions. Now, all we've been talking about so far, I think justifiably, is the service that the bus company will perform. But it's very obvious that another interest that people have in the bus company, it isn't contained in that at all, has to do with this as a source of employment. Now, nobody set the bus company up so that it would provide jobs. That wasn't the purpose for setting it up. But this is a dimension, and this is a source of concern. And as soon as you get to what Rev. Oxley is talking about, it has nothing to do with the service at all. It has nothing to do with the organization of the board. It has to do with who's going to get the job. In setting up the board, it should have been foreseen that this unplanned for dimension would become an important one too. Now, Mexican Americans, Negroes are concerned not only with bus schedules. They want to drive the reservoir, they won't drive the bus. The place to get at who's going to drive the bus is It's nice to have somebody on the board who is concerned with who drives the bus.
All right, then I'll see if I can rephrase this. The absence of minority persons on the board
in policy, put in policy-making levels, Mr. Chairman, and that includes the whole structure of our city.
Yeah,
see, until we get minority representation in policy-making levels, we're going to have these problems.
The reason we're talking about it today is because of that, with regard to just one company, the transit company, is that I think what the investment idea here, what Leon was saying was, that until we do what you've just mentioned, we're going to have problems. And he's saying, is it worth the investment, the risk? Can we reduce that risk by having minority persons specifically in these policy-making positions?
Now, what
Max said is precisely what we're trying to get at here, that the secondary functions, such as he mentioned, the purpose of a transit company is really not to employ people. That is not why it's set up. But what's bugging people is the fact that that's going to be one of the functions. And to have that function fully understood on that level from the beginning is to have people who represent that segment. Am I?
That's my point.
That's what your point is. All right. George?
I come back now to what I was, said I wanted 2 points.
And we've had your point.
I think, really, we are at the point of using your framework for discussion, and that we have collectively come more in agreement, at least for the people here, the minority and majority as represented here, I think have approached some consensus. Reverend Oxley and I are saying we both think that the nature of the original establishment of a board with high concern for financial experience is understandable. I think we're about together on that. And
but does that mean the exclusion of minorities?
Well, let me only go to my next point.
Okay.
We've reached some approaching common understanding because more facts have come into the picture. And now aren't we at the point where we are thinking of what can now happen? Let's not be abrasive about what did happen that was wrong. Let's start directing our attention to what could happen. And I, for one, would say that as we look ahead to the next year, 68 and 69 and so forth, in addition to the factors of business acumen and the political reality and the banker background and communication skills that had high priority in the original thinking of who should be on, we're now coming to the point where there should now be consideration of some vehicle of having user concerns being communicated. And I'm not so sure we should give up, Glenn, this idea of an advisory committee of users. If it's the only thing, I'd agree with you, that is not enough. But maybe we want both to have an advisory committee of users be considered by the city and corporations one and two. And second, that either by an addition of the number of directors, or at the time when a vacancy occurs, there should be consideration. We now give consideration to how to have a person selected at that point who is now a minority race individual who can work effectively with the other directors and bring to that group's consideration this additional element, our concern for the people who ride, our concern for the employment, with due concern for fair treatment. Now, aren't we approaching the point where we start thinking of what we now propose, and to whom do we propose it, and exactly?
I think we are, but I still sense that we're not quite yet together on two or three other things that have been mentioned. I sense that you and Reverend Oxley are together on that point, but I sense that others are not necessarily with you two on that.
All right.
And I don't want to be premature until we're sure we are
we are clear on one or two other things, and I would agree we would ask the question then what should be done, but I'm not sure we're at that point yet from what I said.
Well, I think there's something very interesting that is emerging here, and I think it could very well be helpful to government in the future. It is only natural and inevitable that activities move from a private provision through time to a collective provision. 150 years ago, in many cities in this country, if you wanted to protect your home from fire, you joined a company and you paid, and a device was put on your door. And if your house caught on fire, you're paid, a fire equipment came to put your fire out. If you didn't have the device on your door, you weren't a dues-paying member of the fire company, your fire was not extinguished. Fire control in many cities, not all of them, was handled on a free enterprise program. Now, probably when it first went over into the collective sphere of general control, there may have been a feeling that the city had an obligation to 30% or something of controlling fire. Nobody now thinks of that at all. When one man's house burns, it's a danger to the entire city. Down the road, there are already beginning to be discussions in many communities that mobility is so essential to everybody, whether that person rides the bus or whether he owns property or what degree he is a citizen, I mean, in whatever way he approaches this as a citizen, that no fare at all is contemplated. That is, that transit is provided like air, and it's going to be a very good case made. Now, it's only inevitable, though, when something which in a community like San Diego for the last 75 years has justified itself by the cash box, by the fare you dropped in it, that in its first 6 months it was going to be viewed very much from the money-making point of view. Another thing, our source of funds came very much tied, the HUD funds and others came very much tied to a money-making and a return point of view. Down the road, though, this is going to change, and I think that it's extremely important that users be represented. We have the same situation developing in the question of the port. Questions were raised 10 years ago that were very much to the point of whether the port commissioners were justified in making expenditures for beauty of the harbor. And there was a large, very well justified feeling on the part of a number of them that the expenditures of the port commission should be channeled completely into harbor works, industrial harbor works. That situation is changing now. And I think that you get a broader point of view, a broader charge and obligation. I think that it's essential that in a corporation like this, which is to provide the intensely important thing of mobility to the community, that users be represented on the policy-making board. And it is not necessary that the users necessarily be people of a certain minority representation, but it is extremely important that people who understand the essential of mobility be included, and that certainly is going to include the users.
We keep hearing merging fact that users should be represented.
Carol, I'm a little bothered by that first point up there. It seems to me that on the majority side, it seems to me that Ed Butler was saying that, and we have it on the majority side here, that we were trying to solve on a citywide basis the problem of buses. Without regard to race, I interpreted him to mean is that there was to be no racial overtones in any respect in this thing. I asked Mr. Butler, is that what you were saying or not?
How do you mean racial?
In other words, that the problem was going to be resolved or solved without regard to race, et cetera, et cetera.
I'll say, to the extent I had a leading role in this, and I think I did, that never once did this cross my mind any consideration of race, color, creed, or national origin as to how this board should be formed or how it should be composed. Let me add this. Also, as we publicized this thing, as we went through the election, as the structure began to emerge, people from the community did come to us and say, I'd be interested in doing this. And I've set up generally these kind of areas, at least in my own mind, Not once did a Mexican American or did a Negro ever call or come to me, and whether they came to the council or not, I don't know, I don't think so, ever come and say, hey, how about a spot for me on the board? I say that because had they done so, I'm sure it would have triggered something. And it might have triggered, in my mind, maybe we should look at this thing, but you guys, if I may say so, where the hell were you 2 years ago when we were putting it together?
May I continue just a moment here?
Mac almost jumped off his chair.
Did they all volunteer to be on the board? Is that the way you got them? If so, I have very little confidence in the board.
Volunteer, we have the...
You mean somebody came up and said, look, will you put me on the board?
We have a number of candidates from these various areas, and the selection was finally made again by the council. But again, I can say to you, and I think I know of no instance where a Negro presented himself and said, I'd like to get in the action.
If you have bankers to present themselves and say, look, I want to be in action, I want to be on the board, that isn't the way you select board members. If so, it's a strange way of selecting them. We maybe need to go back into how were they selected. People don't volunteer.
We're talking
about the own board.
Nothing could be more wrong.
But I came out and said, look, I want to be on the board.
They do it all the time. They do it all the time for all boards.
I think this often happens with a very active community group. That your best leadership, who have a real serious interest in a project, will come along and say they are interested in doing. You certainly have it for election offices, and you have it also from the standpoint of serving on committee.
You mean among the characteristics that you named, you forgot to name that these people volunteered. These five men
volunteered. I didn't say they volunteered. I would say that when you put together a thing like this, you pull out the names, or you think kind of about the guys that would fit the slots here. You talk to them and say, would you be interested? Some would say, I can't do it, I'm involved. Other considerations get out.
That was Joe.
People also do call and say, I'd like to help in this thing.
That's right. What you have done is shifted the initiative. In other words, what you really did was to think about characteristics, and then you thought about people who would fit in the slot, and you approached them to find out whether or not they would be willing to serve. But a moment ago, you implied that some of us Negroes and Mexicans should have come to you and said, look, let me be on your board.
Right.
Why didn't you come to some of us and say, will you serve? By God, I would have said yes.
Thank you for waiting.
I think what I'm trying to say here is I see emerging in this dialogue, although I'm the second time meeting here, I realize that I'm a greenhorn in that respect. But it seems to me that in any kind of situation like this where we're trying to ascertain and know minority and majority images, perceptions, etc., that when they have the tendency to assume too much prematurely and to perhaps point the finger that on the majority side and on the other side, it goes both ways, that something's not genuine and not real here. And what I was trying to suggest is that with the best of intentions and honesty and all, the number one problem there sort of gives the appearance is that no one was thinking about the problem of race.
I think I know what's bothering you. Let me see if I can clarify that
Carol,
point.
Carol, yeah, we're not here to slap people on the hand, all right?
No.
We're here to point. We're not here. I think we're bringing up this issue of slapping people on the hand for how they did something or why they did it this way. But we're here to point out a discrepancy in what has already taken place.
And
ratify that discrepancy. Not to say you guys were all wrong, you're all washed up, you shouldn't have this guy on the board and all that stuff. We're saying in addition to what you have already proceeded to do.
May I make a comment then, Leon? Kermit, I think the statement here is not referring to Ed's presentation at all. It's really taken from the majority perception last week. It started out by saying we agreed that when things come up this way, many times it's business as usual, which means that simply instead of saying minorities or old people or what have you, it's problem solving as opposed to people involved. For example, the reason this is here is we said
while they did choose on the basis of financial stability, financial position, and all of this, that most of the time things like this are done and race is not considered. Not in terms of what he is saying with regard to the operation, but rather that one of the majority perceptions in terms of a problem, a transit company, a board, or what have you, is that many times simply members are chosen some way without regard to race being a matter, and the minorities are saying that race should be a matter in selection of board members and so forth. So it's not really referring to his.
Let me squeeze it on out to the final point here. It seems to me that I don't know who these people are. I heard two or three names mentioned. I know a couple of them there. But it seems to me that certain assumptions are being made about the present board constituency, which may or may not be true, because I hear certain sounds like an advisory committee, and here again a kind of a dangerous assumption that to get a so-called advisory committee that somehow intelligence, awareness, and perception of human values is going to be more in an advisory group than in the present board. This kind of thinking bothers me, because actually the whole thing is so new. Who is to say that at this stage there are five people here on this transit board are going to be a real hang-up as far as human values are concerned?
We stayed away from that deliberately so as not to talk about the board members. We're really talking about process. And maybe this would reflect. Last week we decided, 2 weeks ago, we would not talk about the nature of the people on the board, as you've just mentioned, but rather look at the process by which they were chosen. That's why we didn't want them here. So we're not really talking about what their commitment to it or not. We're saying the process is what concerns the community from this end of it.
I just wanted to elaborate a little bit, Carol. I thought you were going to say it and I wouldn't have to, but I think what you're saying there, when Ed was saying that race is not a factor, what we're trying to say is that when most people say race is not a factor, that they are accepting the normalcy of the discriminatory practice in which the Negro and the Mexican are invisible. And without being mean, people do this. They say race is no factor. But this thing is so much a part of them that they don't even look around to see. They don't really know that it is a factor.
Yes, and what we're saying is it continues this.
Right.
It should be a factor, we're saying.
It should be. You have to make a conscious effort to make it a factor until it really isn't a factor.
Right.
Yes.
That's the whole thing there. Admiral, and then women. Let's see. Hands up again now. One, two, three, four. All right, Admiral.
I just want to say that I think for most of us recognize that race is a factor. And, for example, I'm a good friend of Reverend George Smith. I've been working with him for 7 years, and I'm one of his supporters of the Board of Education, and I think he's a fine representative on the Board of Education. So, most of us do recognize this. Now, I mentioned this advisory committee a while back because I had the idea, from what Ed said, that these five people were on for 4 years, and that was it. So in the interim, until you could get more people on, and I think if you can get a good minority race man like George Smith to represent the minorities on this board, that would be fine. On the other hand, he's got to be a man who's qualified. I don't want a man trying to run this transit system. I don't care what his race is. If he's got a sixth or seventh grade education and hasn't got anything in his head.
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that the dialogue is to bring about majority consciousness. And now that we have it, from what I gather from the conversation, that we have discovered that this invisibility or neglect. And we're conscious of it now, and we're going to do something about it. Now, where are we going from here now? You see, we have this before us now. We all know that there was an oversight in the selection. Probably that was an oversight. And by the same token, we are assuming that the members selected to the board, or appointed or elected to the board, did not have minority concerns in mind. I mean, this is a false assumption in all probability.
No, not the members appointed. We're not concerned with them.
We're concerned with the process by which they were appointed.
Taking that into consideration, that the process may have had, we are assuming that it did not have minority concerns.
Correct.
This is what we're assuming.
Correct.
And now that we have been reasonably assured that this was an oversight, not a planned thing, I'm not saying who said it. I'm just saying that from the discussion that is going around, I'm not speaking of the presentation, but from the discussion that there was a minority oversight, and it wasn't intentional, we want to assume. We're assuming that it wasn't intentional. It may have been intentional. But now what are we going to do now about it?
All right, as soon as we clear up one or two, I think we can move in that. Yeah. John?
Right. Well, I certainly hope that we can. Dr. Hall brought up the pertinent fact that we ought to move. Now, we have the guideline. We've had all of this tilting at the windmill, and we ought now to discuss how we might do this and using the process that we have. But I also like to make another point, which is a slight digression, and that is that Admiral Hartman falls in the trap of many people in the power structure of being put in the position of elected, no matter how well we might personally feel about it. May be the kiss of death for this man, simply because in the atmosphere that we live in 1968, people are not accepting what the power structure is offering. And for the purpose of this dialogue, this may be very important that names not be mentioned in terms of who is and who can.
Thank you for pointing that out, because I didn't want to have to end the discussion today by pointing out, I think, and if we are learning this process here by the nitty-gritty, as we say, I think John's point is well taken. Sometimes when you mention a man's name, Admiral, it's the very one that the minority rejects. And John is suggesting that...
Oh, I knew that.
All right. That's important. That's really what we were talking about. And I think it's important simply to keep it on the level that Princeton's representative should be chosen, rather than to get more hostility started by maybe crystallizing or polarizing a group. Let's see, George.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on to what moves we ought to make.
This is a very significant factor, and also coming back to how they make these selections, for an example, on any board, as to versus members of this board or members of the council, for an example, going down to the minorities and only approaching certain minorities. When people say represented in this dialogue should be approached to suggest persons to serve on these committees. You see, because it will come back to the old traditional thing again. I'm going to tap the guy who I think is a nice Negro, who can best work with us. Well, if he can best work with you, you can almost bet your bottom dollar he can't best work with black people.
All right, I think we're getting then to what really we wanted to get to, the selection process. So that one is well taken too, George. That's still in line with John. John,
yeah.
Then we're going to get to some specific things.
Okay, this whole atmosphere, this whole thing we're talking about, to me, sounds very reminiscent of the situation we had with the Mayor's Committee for Jobs. There we were able to sit down and talk and work out a situation where board members were added. I think this is really what we're asking and what we're talking about here. I think what most all of us want are additional members on the board that represent minorities, that represent users, this type of thing. This is what we're talking about now.
All right, let me then move on rapidly. Joe?
Can we, in doing this that we're going to move into, make this more general than just the specific transit board in our suggestions and what we offer, so that we can say any board, any policy-making board, we are thinking in terms of how we do this, what should be done on any policy-making board, rather than just specifically the transit board. So
yeah, that sounds like implications
right
here.
All right,
can we... Dren, did you?
I just want to hammer that one home, that I think the thing which most people really are concerned about is the process, and that there's a certain ingredient which has been lost in the process. And it isn't only the transit board, but it's other things as well. And if Ed Butler had been able to say, now wait just a minute, when it came to that, the people around that board, we did consider that, and that man right there, as far as we're concerned, is the one who could deal with that particular problem. We were sensitive to it,
We made provisions for it. Now, what is, you know, that was our thinking about it. Now, what is your address to that solution? What he is really saying is it wasn't one of the ingredients in the mix at all. And what he is saying about the transit board has been said time and time again about almost everything we're talking about in government and in business. And what I think what we want to do is to nail it home in such a way that we can be rest assured that when decisions are made, that is as much an ingredient in the mix as it is whether the Democrats are involved or the Republicans are involved or the bankers are involved. Whatever people you say, I covered the bases, one of the bases you covered is that one. And to make sure that's there for keeps. When you know it's there for keeps, when you can depend on it, then you can go on to the other things. But until you do, until you're suspicious, and until everything is ad hoc reasoning, post facto, after it's been done, then we go through it again and again, that shows that the insensitivity still exists. I'm saying we should take some real lessons with this and try to nail it home so that we can rest assured that once you resolve it, you begin to get some evidence of that kind of sensitivity.
All right.
Just one quick one, Carol.
Quick one, Ned.
You're going to go away from here with conclusions that the decision-making process leading to the selection of these board members excluded the consideration you just spoke of.
That's
there
right.
Has not been here, unfortunately, any member of the council to participate in this. You have not heard from any guy who actually made the decision. I've given you my personal viewpoints, what I would have done were I in their place, but you can't take from what I said what in fact did happen. And please don't put me in the spot of you guys writing up the minutes and saying, Ed Butler said this is the way you guys came this thing back, and I got to live with nine people, you know. Just want to make that point.
Ed, you did an extra job. We really are not on you. It was from the previous week when we outlined the kinds of things here.
Carol, that's the reason I asked for
general.
Yeah.
Right. Well, then, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Then we'll have to start with the present structure of selecting councilmen by the city.
We can use any structure.
But we have to start where we are affected most.
Now, you think we're going to get in the bind again? All we're saying is let's continue to use this example, but be sure it's applied. And
we're dealing on policy-making level, though, Mr. Chairman. Minority is excluded from policy-making levels, and the constitution or whatever it is of this city is designed. Charter is designed. It is designed to keep the minorities on the fringe area.
Would you talking about the councilmatic district lines? Would you have us stop and do that? Is all I'm saying, or would you take this example and go ahead and still get accomplished what you think?
We can do that, yes. Any way you want to do it, long as we get minorities at the policy making level.
Precisely.
And the charter excludes them. Because when you bring a Negro or Mexican American to this city running against a Caucasian for a council job, he's going to be defeated.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying that this is so. But let's use this example to get these things on, and then maybe take that one as the next one. We agree. That's really what we're talking about.
All right.
Can we look at this then and tie up some of these things? Am I correct in saying that the problem is, at this point, maybe phrased in two questions? The first question is whether or not we should now add 2, 3, 4, 5, what have you, add representatives to the board, so that they're representative of the users. Is that not what I hear also?
Now,
at least talk to that point.
The bylaws and things, now we have to know about those. Will,
he said
will,
that's possible. He said that's possible. Then, to get through this in terms of what should be done to correct it, oversight, what have you, do you want to talk about then some specific actions? One may be then to recommend that new members be added to it. Am I correct? That's one.
Yeah, but one of the things which does at the moment troubles me is I think there's been some very productive discussion and presentation here today. And the people who are really going to have to make this decision, I gather, are the councilmen. And we're going to have to make sure that we get them on board, not simply to say to them, add two more without benefit, really, of what this discussion has been about as to why we're asking. And what it's about, the central ingredients.
This business of selection, it seems to me, needs to go further. It that what we're saying is select someone who's representative of the user. Well, how do you do this? Who represents the user? How are we going to determine what represents the user?
All right.
It seems to me as if the point.
And that's, of course, the same guidelines we use to select the original board members.
I was going to say the same thing. The same way that you select someone who has business skills, the council would probably think in terms of, at least when I have listened, what usually happens is you think in terms, people suggest names, and you talk about people who might fit very well a position, who might be able to bring that skill to the board, just like you thought about more than one person, more than one banker, I have no doubt. They didn't start out focused on one banker. You probably thought about several men who might have the skill that you need here. And then you approach a man. You finally say, well, I think he'd be a good man. You approach him. You discuss whether or not you think he'd be good. Then you approach him and ask, would he serve? And it's done just like you would select other members. We tell you, no, at least I, for one, am not talking about it in a way where you have a special member of the board that selects in a different manner from the way the other board members are selected, you see.
Carol?
Yes.
Again, we're getting, although we're trying to, that's what I was trying to get to in my statement, that let us get to what the ingredients of any policy-making board should be. And this then would take in the additional people that we need for any additional policy-making board. But let's talk first about what the ingredients of a good policy-making board should be.
On page 4, we have from the last time suggested directions for solutions which take care of all kinds of selections or what have you. If you'll turn to page 4, we can now look at it in terms of this problem or any such problem. On page 4 is precisely the form to take care of that. It says, statement of a problem, minority perception, majority perception. All we're really saying in another way is that now let's tie it down in terms of whether it's for this or any other board. What are some of these specific steps that we can start with implementing? Number one, Matt mentioned one, for example. Do you go to minority persons, or George said minority organizations, or people sitting here? Do you also approach them as you start out thinking about board selection? Now, on page 4, it outlines those steps that can cover all of those. Mr. Chairman, one way in selecting, you have to have, first of all, I would feel an interest from an individual due to his awareness of the problem that exists. And I feel this is one of the great mistakes that we have made in selecting people. I want to completely get the name out of the way now, but Brother Scott, Walker's name was mentioned. Well, now, George, he has never been to one of these dialogues. He's not aware of what we're trying to do. But to go out and select him for that vacancy would be an injustice to the man and also to the board. Give me an idea. That's what we have to give me. A person that's aware of the problem and is trying to do something to correct the problem.
Right.
That person should be on the board. Whether you like the person's attitude or not, the man's contribution that he can make to solve the problem that exists is the thing that's important. And we deal in personalities, and which is human, I guess, but we should go a little deeper than that.
All right, then let's tie it down. What we're saying is, George, can you put it?
Yes, it cannot be. All it has to be is when, as Attorney Butler said, for an example, is that they did not consider there was no minority situation as far as, you know, why a person wasn't chosen. So a person has to be chosen in this particular ballot we're in now that does not fit into or is not a part of the system.
I'm trying to get a general statement to tie it down, such as consult 25, 30, all, most, minority, or individuals.
Consult those organizations who are involved in the problem. Now, by saying involved, I mean, for example, Reverend Austin said, who are here to do something about it?
Okay.
Now, we're not talking about core because there's no core representative here. So we're not talking about just, you know, all of them. We're not talking about the Southeast Ministers Alliance per se. However, the Reverend Oxley is a member, but I don't think he's here representing the Alliance per se. So we're not saying go to the minister, and we're not saying go to Reverend Smith and the Board of it, but those who've shown involvement here.
Well, it won't always be here. We're trying to make it broader than that. I'm trying to say, what method do you want to put down? And if at any time the county, the port authority, the school board, the city, what have you, when they begin thinking about it, what do you want them to do?
Okay. May I ask a question this way? How did you select, how did the council select a man whatever procedure they use in selecting other members of the board should be used in selecting the members that we are suggesting? The only thing that we are insisting is that this be a dimension.
Right.
And as Glenn pointed out beautifully, if they had taken it into account, we're not even saying they had to have more than five members. But this dimension should have been taken into account. That's what our argument is.
Right. You want to state that.
So we don't want somebody selected in a special way, and I want to go on record as being opposed to setting this group up as selecting somebody.
Right, that's what I was getting at.
Can we say community-wide visibility?
But that is not the result.
Is that the normal communication, which does exist between one community, and which is that when the decision making begin to find someone from this community, there's already a gulf of communication. There isn't ready at hand a variety of people that can automatically assume they've been talking to over the years, they're familiar with, that they have seen all the time. He says, I haven't seen you. Is what he said. Well, there was no question about where the bankers were. The bankers were there all the time. And I'm saying that the minorities, in a way, are not there all the time. And the burden is, well, nothing to be gained by, at this point, it seems to me, by blaming back and forth whose that is. What I'm saying is that if you're going to be part of the process, one of the things has to be not simply an ad hoc arrangement each time you arrive at it, but the normalcy of communication between the decision-making groups or the power structure and the minority community. That's got to be normal as it is in the majority community,
right,
and perhaps more so because of thinking of history and of built-in things which at the moment we're trying to accomplish so that it becomes normal. Then it becomes a point of debate and talk. We all understand.
Carol? If there's any need to write, maybe there's nothing to write down here. Or
okay. But, Carol, I guess we get hung up on this thing when we say consult the minority. We got hung up on the EOC when they consulted the minorities. Now, not going back through that again. They consulted those minorities which best suited their needs. And we ended up with organizations on there who wasn't even in the community with a membership, let alone doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm specifically saying now, it's no secret that in the Negro community, the only three active organizations, the NAACP, the Urban League, and CORE, these are only three active organizations within the minority. I mean, there's actively to do something. I'm not saying individuals who aren't concerned about civil rights, who aren't working. I'm talking about organizational structure. So let's leave it this way. That since CIC is the contact between the city and the minority community in this way, otherwise you're their community relation people, let CIC contact their office concerning persons to fill their position, and then this office may get in touch with the other organizations, for an example. But not get hung up again about, well, we saw, EOC ended up with their CRC, which is a defunct organization, the Southeast Ministers Alliance, which ended up cutting black people's throat. I'm not going through that again. And that's the reflection upon the ministers, that's right. Because when you start doing this, that's wrong.
Otherwise,
you shall be informed. Or the Urban League shall be informed and start from there. But start from a point of informing that this board is open and that this organization may make it be known that to other organizations involved that it's open.
How does that cover it?
It seems that there is one point of information that is missing, or at least that I didn't pick out from Mr. Butler was making his presentation. He said that the board members are selected on the basis for a four-year term, but that these terms are staggered. Okay, we know that the organization is quite new, so maybe we should find out who's the first one off. How long does he have to go? Is it two and two?
I can't remember how it staggered. There's obviously got to be at least one vacancy in 1968. And I would guess, I don't recall the terms of the staggering, but...
Now, we're in the latter part of 1967. We've got something to aim for.
Mac over here pointed out that he felt that there should not be a special way of selecting this person. Okay, if there's not going to be a special way and there is a vacancy coming up in the near future, maybe this is what we should look for.
Well, I think we're back to specifics. If we say consult CIC and put that in there, next vacancy, I think we covered that point, or do we? You see, we immediately got back on the specific on this board. Does that cover this next vacancy?
CIC will make the choice.
No.
We'll make the contact for the selectee.
That's right. They are the communication system. This has been established, the CIC being the communication system between city and community, or between a majority and minority. This is already established. That's why they spent the money on the budget to do that. So let them do that job by disseminating this information, because if they don't know who the concerned factors in the community, then I recommend that their budget be cut next year, too. And the same thing, if they don't involve Mexican Americans, it's the same situation, because it means minorities, not just Negroes. So the same thing should apply as the Mexican Americans get the same feeling I get.
Is this cover your point? That next point you were talking
about? Yeah.
We have to keep in mind, and since we don't know how the terms are staggered, there might be some dimension that's represented by the person whose term is running out that is felt you still need. And so that might cause some difficulty, you see. Suppose the banker's term is up.
Yeah, I think we get in a bind because we really got away from an important dimension there.
And that was the expansion.
You see? What Matt pointed out is the difficulty when we start this way as opposed to what we were doing. If the process is correct in the first place, we could automatically take care of what Matt said, the possibility, and what you pointed out. That is, that there may need to expand. This way, we really eliminated from consideration expansion or additions to the board. We simply said, if one expires next year, then replace them, etc. It closes the book on other alternatives. The expansion of the board, dollars from 5, maybe to 7, to 9, to 25. What is? It closes that door.
No, I didn't intend to close the door. But I was saying that this is one way, one alternative that we can choose. Now, another alternative, for instance, would be to say, have those members who are leaving become ex officio members. Or if you want an advisory board, those whose term of office expire, then perhaps can become members of this advisory board. But the users, the consumers of the product, of the service being offered, still have got to be in the selection process, not this advisory board.
Well, a couple of things. One is that other boards that I know of have members who are specifically stated as representing the public at large. That is the way you symbolically state that concern at least has been handled. That's the first thing. The second thing, it seems to me, in where we are now, it's terribly important to symbolically demonstrate that the city has indeed taken cognizance of this and has indeed expanded its horizons. So that part of my notion would be that there needs to be somehow a dramatic representation that the city does take cognizance of this, and if you're to create it, to create members at large or to represent users or at a new dimension, which is there concretely as a specific expansion of that board. The other board was the way we usually do it, and that symbolically this would say we're doing it a different way, and from here on we'll do it in a different way.
Are you suggesting then that the council, of course, is absent today?
Yeah.
But certainly coming from this, we have several suggestions, alternatives. One is to expand the board.
Right, which is what I say.
Right. One is to expand the board. The other is to, replace at the end of that expiration.
Right.
Another was create advisory boards, or some advisory board. Is this correct, so far?
Yes.
Though we don't have the people here yet for this. But certainly we don't want to lose sight of what we're saying. Were there any other alternatives?
No other, Mike?
So you say expanding the board. Are we thinking about expanding it to 7 or?
Yeah. 9, 25, 100.
No, let the council, right. Let them decide. Let them decide that.
I mean, that's an option.
But I originally favored a board of about 7 people myself.
Okay, fine. We got a good councilman here who's ready to make the recommendation. Great.
All right. Any other alternatives?
This group is meeting here to contribute to a public service. I assume that's why we're here. I think we're beginning to get hung up on trying to write a letter with 30 people writing that letter. If we're moving to the point of action, I think it's effective to get into small working groups or committees. And I think you have at least 2 major problems as I see it. One is to have people giving time to what are the possible ways of arriving at the solution, like your suggestion. I'm only saying I think we'd be more effective if named a committee of 2, 3, 4 people who would get together and give some thought and come back and make a proposal. And then collectively we accept or reject it as a design. I think it'll be effective. I think there is another one which has not been talked to, but it's, I'm coming back to what's been in my mind for the last 15 minutes. I think there is a very real problem of how we get the nomination of the person who might be on the board representing the community at large, and particularly users and minority race people. And I don't think it should be your administrative staff making the nomination. How we get the consensus, if we could ever achieve that, of those who are the many different minority groups within the community, that they can say, this time we want to go behind John Anderson as the person that we want for this particular purpose. This is one of the real problems, and I wanted to come back. I mean, that's in my mind, I've been aware of that in the last few months or years. One way or another, I have made some contribution towards nominating people for special committees dealing with educational problems. Speaking now for the schools, we have given consideration to trying to achieve representatives from the minority groups. This has been deliberate and we've given every attention to it. But we know we have not done the best job, because basically we go in terms of visibility of interest. And now I think it is a problem, a challenge, if you will, to the minority community, that they help to give visibility to appropriate people and help the council, the board of education, the supervisors, to know who would be appropriate people to be nominated for or to be appointed to these various quasi-governmental units, like the board of directors for the transit unit.
May I then clarify, George? The problem is not, the minorities would perceive what you said differently. What they're really griping about is that the process by which the board, the city, the county, has been using has not been one to allow for the greatest possible range, as opposed to a consensus in the community. Well, that's what we're really trying to get at on number one. The other point I think needs clarifying is, the suggestion was not CIC staff making a selection. That is what they're trying to say not to do. Right, George?
That's right. This came up with the Board of Education when they were appointing the members to look into the problems in schools. CORE was originally left off of that committee and CORE raised hell. That was right, justly right. They should have, because they were taken to be the type of organization that would not be wholesome to do this type of job. Well, this is the consideration we're saying an organization like CIC can make the dissemination of the information so that let the people themselves involve the visible people who will become known to you, those visible persons.
Well, we're trying to plow through
on that detail. I'm only saying this is one, and may I make one other point?
If it's not too long, George.
I'm only saying that one individual who's invited people to serve on advisory committee I have deliberately invited people that I knew were opposition people to my point of view because I wanted their involvement. It has not been a deliberate attempt to avoid them. I've gone out for them, and I named specifics if you want to check with me afterwards.
All right, we're just trying to pinpoint where do we go from here in terms of specific processes, as you're pointing out. I think that you have a point over here in terms of the method by which this would be done should be, of course, self-committee. What we're really trying to do is, in the group, go through the process by which the group gives certain specific alternative actions. Then the group would say, the wisdom of whether or not this should be done, expansion, replacement, etc., the wisdom of that should rest with a subcommittee. Am I making any sense though? But we have to first get ideas.
All right.
And then the implementation of this might certainly be through subcommittees. We cannot fight over here. Too many people. So I would agree with you there. But maybe we're ahead of ourselves.
Can you move on that to appoint a committee now to go into doing just that?
Right.
Are we ready for a committee on this? Well, the council, we're not here today. What should we do about that?
Well,
shall we move on and get a subcommittee, meet with the city council, the whole bit? We can.
Well, it was stated that there's nothing in the Constitution bylaws that would prohibit expansion.
All right, then let's get to the subcommittee and let them handle it then.
Yeah, the councilman stated that.
Is that correct at this point? On a subcommittee, let them handle it? What about that? Mac, you were about to say
something? Yeah, and it might sound contradictory, but I must say that it seems to me that this particular group of which we are part would have discharged its obligation if it suggests these alternatives to the council, not that we appoint a subcommittee to decide which one of these is best, but the council view is best. I think that what we need to do is what Glenn has said. We need to make the council aware that we believe they left an important dimension out in selecting the board. Then we can, our subcommittee would have the job of saying, what are some ways that you could take into account the thing that you have left out? And I don't think we need to go any farther than that.
I think, do you want to understand that? That's very important. That is the crux of it.
Seems to me that this whole group is sitting here because of this dimension, or we wouldn't be here at all. And it's better to come right out and point out the dimension as one of the problems in selection procedure for all kinds of advisory bodies and not go any further.
Right. To point it up as the problem that we've discussed.
It's the problem.
All right, Kermit?
I think the solving of this problem, though, would somewhere along the line, obviously, should involve council people, because what is accomplished in this kind of a human encounter has little or no relevance to those people who aren't here. I think there's a value here that can't be sidetracked just for the sake of some kind of expediency.
So again, we're back to the absence of the city council today.
It's unfortunate that city council people aren't here to be a part of this kind of thing.
And when you say absence of the council, I understand that Mayor Kern, who's a member of the council, was here, that Mrs. Cobb was here for a while. I have the flu, and I shouldn't be in town at all today, but I'm here for a little while. Before you can say that the council was here, do you require that 5 of the 9 be here for the full 3 hours, or that 5 of the 9 be here for at least half of it? That's really never been decided. And there's some councilmen you're never going to get here unless you pull them screaming and kicking into the session.
I think what I'm trying to say here, Carol, is that communication has a way of breaking down when two or three people or one individual tries to interpret either verbally or written consensus of a feeling of a group this size. So I think there's a human element missing here. I wouldn't say the number, the quantity is so important, but some more involvement.
At this point, Mr. Hom did write a note that says he just called. He was quite upset because he was not able to attend this meeting this morning because of an emergency. He said he'd like for us to know he's sorry that he could not make it. So we accept that, and it should be recorded. Then.
Well, there are a couple of things. One is I'd like again to nail down what seems to me the principle of underlying what Max said, and that is that too often the posture becomes, you've got the problem, what do you want, give us a solution. And the way that seems to me is to move away from where the real responsibility lies.
that the decision-making process is still with the council. What you want to get into the council as many ingredients as possible and for them to make the decision. And the first way that they can evidence they understand the nature of the problem is to consult other people. If they don't do that, then they don't understand the problem. But that's their decision to make, and who they select is important. That's the first thing. The second thing, it seems to me one of the ways you can get, or at least I have been able to get with all the councilmen at various occasions with things which have concerned me, is that you ask to have a conference, and I've seen all of them sitting right around this very table about some specific issue from 8 o'clock until 9:30 or 10 o'clock with a conference of the city council dealing only with that particular matter. But if we really want to get it to them, they call a conference, and they're here.
That's the deputy mayor. He'll schedule the conference if he feels it's warranted.
Mr. Chairman, in doing that, now, I'm fairly new in the city, and I'm not acquainted with the procedure of a hearing before the council on matters dealing with race. Now, in other cities, they have a policy of referring the matter when it comes up dealing with race to some other agency that is a coordinator, and they shift responsibility out of the council where the policy, where the decision can actually be made. Now I'm wondering, is that the policy here? If you go into the council with this, will you be heard? Is there the councilman is here? Will you be heard?
If you go into what matter before the open
dealing on a racial issue is what we're talking about now.
If you go into the body when they're in session, you'll be heard attentively by everybody who's there. If you have a council conference in this room, you'll be heard.
They're referring to CIC.
Referring to CIC or any other problem you hold a conference on, you get.
But I mean, will the decision be made there? I'm trying to see if it will be worthwhile to go to the council with it.
If the council feels that they have enough information in front of them to make a decision now and then, they can. Quite often what they do is they will move that the matter be referred to the city manager for report on this specific topic, or move that the city attorney and the city manager prepare a report to the council on this, or that we hold a council conference in the next room referring to this sometime next week. They don't want to make a decision shooting from the hip. They want to feel if they have enough information. And quite often we have stuff that dumped in our laps when we're in session, and we want to make a decision now and then, but we feel it'll be a sounder decision if we could wait a week and get a report from the manager or the attorney, or come in here and sit down and take our coats off and talk about it. But I think we're within a week or two from making a decision once you get into the chamber. And you can start with a conference if the deputy mayor will schedule it. He's bothered to schedule a conference.
But in the light of the council, not enough light of time, in light of the council being a part of the dialogue, when you are confronted with this matter in open session, what would be the, what would be the procedure? I mean, there are certain procedures dealing with certain issues in all cities for the protection of the council.
If you want to be heard by the council, any citizen can direct communication to the city clerk, asked to appear on the council docket, and then it's printed that John Doe to address the council on this topic, and then you can speak, and you're on Cobo FM radio, Union Trip, pick up what you're talking about, and Mayor Kern and the council will ask you then and there if we're able to. If not, we'll schedule a council conference right then and there. We schedule a lot of conferences.
He's
right
missing the point, Mr. Chairman, and he's dialoguing on something else. The point is, it's with the people involved here in this committee, do we still have to run out with another committee, as said over here, and do the same thing all over again? That's why we asked him to come here.
Now, this, Reverend Oxley, your consideration that may be in another area taken up later, I'm not sure. Here, this was set up really to have those individuals present that would be involved in this decision making and who would be effecting the changes. Seems to me we have the other problem we discussed at the earlier part of this meeting. How shall we somehow make it urgent enough to have those here? Maybe we need to do some more contacting individually or what have you, as opposed to putting it before the city council, which becomes another matter than altogether.
How are we going to expand the board when the city council has the authority to create the board?
But we are not saying we should expand the board. That's what we were saying a minute ago.
Matt's point was, we should blatantly point out that the new dimension in the process should be consideration of minorities. So it's often that this is a dimension in terms of a transit company, that the dimension is consideration of the users. Point is here that we should, our job here is to discuss these things, point them out, come to some decision that this should have been an ingredient, point out to the council, then it's the council's job to make the correction. Am I reading you right, Matt? Leon.
I think this is very close to the same thing, but partly on that subcommittee thing, and I think that you're saying it in a way, but our idea, at least I thought it was in the first instance, was to create an atmosphere in which people could talk and to change attitudes here, but not necessarily to go into the technicalities of how things get done and to set up subcommittees to do that. It seems to me that if we can just sort of keep in mind what we want to do is to get the people here to talk to them and tell them what they ought to be thinking about from our point of view, from theirs too, because we're talking about the benefit of the whole society. And if we can get this idea into the minds of people who are going to make the decisions, then I think we have to set up any special committees or tell them precisely what to do or any other thing. It's going to be natural because they're interested in preserving the community and having the community's welfare as well as we are, except that they may not be aware of some of the factors which may be detrimental to the community and things that are hurting it as we are. So maybe we're just telling them, look, these are things you ought to consider for your welfare and for ours and for the whole community's welfare.
Otherwise, Mike Chater should be a ramrod of this whole idea here. He's sitting here, he's on the council, he should be taking this back to the council, and when you want to set up a conference, you do it and point it out to the conference members. You take the attitudes of the people back on what should be done on this particular issue.
Yeah, that's the purpose of this meeting.
Right, that's why you're here.
To the individual. The time is going to run out, and we have two other items after Bob speaks.
Without forming any subcommittees, would it not be possible to pass, when the time is appropriate, it's been discussed enough, to pass a resolution here as to what we feel ought to be done, put it in the minutes, address the minutes to the council, and ask them to consider it an act of mine.
I'm going back to this very thing, that this was a dialogue, it was to be consensus and changing of opinions and awareness of people. And I think the minute you start to take action with resolutions, everybody waits for the resolution. It hasn't changed their opinion.
Yeah, I think the purpose of this, we discussed there a whole session about resolutions and votes and so forth. I think we're going to lose the value of it if we get too far on the other end. I think we ought to be aware of it.
It's a matter, Carol, of people making commitments here at this particular meeting which they cannot otherwise do except by being in a legal capacity. I think George Hall brought this out greatly, where certain persons could not participate on this basis of making decisions here, which would reflect something that would be taken in front of their board for a decision, like Mike, for example.
Yeah, seemingly what I'm saying in hearing is that we've already made the decision for the purpose of this dialogue group. We've already made that decision. We simply have to remind ourselves several times what that purpose was, or the objective was. We're going to run out of time here, or we probably have. Shall we now? At least we have three alternatives there. Discuss today. We did not discuss the value of one opposes the value of the other, whether one should be done over the other. We simply pointed out a problem. We've also talked about, in terms of selection, at least consult CIC or inform us and we'll get it out to the people. If you have to call a meeting or what have you, as a disseminator of information would close up one of the gaps.
Mr. Chairman, a point of information, man. Now, there's a paradox here that I can't solve. On the one hand, you said that this group is to deal in dialogue only, and the decision would have to be made by the representative heads of the various groups. And then you say that in order to get the information out or to make the selection, it has to refer this to CIC.
No, not refer anything to CIC.
Well, CIC will be responsible for making the contact.
Only, getting out your information.
Well, that's dealing in specifics.
No, I think, George, you want to clarify your point?
The point of consultants is not consulting CIC. It's informing CIC that a position, we are selecting a board to do thus, and so whether it's this board on the transit district, whether it's this board on anything that involves with the city, CIC is an official part of this city. Money comes officially. Therefore, They should all automatically be informed, really, of what's going on. This should have been taking place before, so that they, in turn, could pass it on to the people who are in a position in the minority community who are concerned with effecting changes as it relates to the minority structure, so that they can be informed and make recommendations again and begin to think about, now, who can we suggest? You know, the name and the hat that they came out of these hats with five men, like minorities getting in that hat. But until they know about these omens that's taking place, then it sounds that I don't think we'll be walking forward, because we don't know what's going on and we don't know how they're doing it. So we want to be able to walk forward, and that's why CIC is going to inform us, so we'll know.
Well, this is just my point, Mr. Chairman. Without resolutions, without any votes, leave it to the representative heads of the various groups represented by the city. Who's going to get the information to CIC? We have no committees. We have no authority to pass a resolution to direct somebody to do something. Who's going to do it?
That's in hard mind again, Ron. If they don't decide to do it in their hard mind, then we have no official body to make them do it.
We're getting too specific. You see, if it comes up with the city council, all we're saying is the city council should inform the people in the community. If it comes up with the manager's office, we're saying the manager's office should do it. If it comes up with the port authority and they're tied in at all with the public officials, somebody in that should do it. If we get too specific, we're going to lose the value of it otherwise.
Well, how are we going to know if this is going to be carried out, Mr. Chairman? We can talk here for the next 10 years.
We'll never
bring about an awareness of no action. See, there's a lot of people aware of what's going on, but nobody's acting. That's why we're here.
Okay, Reverend, people say when they get together, well, we didn't know. We didn't think about it, or we didn't consider it. Well, we put them in a position where they will know now. You see, they will know minorities that are bankers. They will know minorities in the community that are millionaires, because we're going to point them out to them, you know. We're going to create some we don't have any. But anyway, we're going to make it known to them. That's what we're saying now.
Okay. Now, we're going to meet December... No, November what is the next?
That's the kid here.
November what? The next meeting is 2 weeks. November 3rd?
At the discretion of the chairman.
No, November, we don't get to that till December. December 10th is the next meeting.
November
10th. Right. Now, we've got a lot of loose things here going.
Huh?
Shall we simply pick up at this point and move it on?
November 10th. Which is a Friday, is that a holiday, because the 11th is a holiday?
They have switched as far as the city is concerned. So we're the day after Thanksgiving.
No, this isn't Thanksgiving.
Oh, I see, okay.
Sorry,
they substitute another.
They substitute the day. Okay.
So it's not a city. Veterans Day, taken on Friday instead of Saturday, is not a holiday.
Right. I'm still calling it Armistice Day.
The question is interesting here in time, it seems to be impertinent. We have talked about this. Very well, the secondary function of any body is employment. Whether it was created for that purpose or not, as Mike pointed out. Should we then zero in on employment? If so, it means we'll have to invite then, and we better do that this afternoon in order to have 2 weeks' notice, we would have to invite those persons, which we agreed upon in this session earlier, who then are concerned with these aspects of the problem. In this case, we'd have to invite the board of directors, I assume, of the transit company, but we should decide on that. Are we wanting to get them to employment today, or shall we make that a month from now and then give them plenty of time? What about employment next time?
Now, 2 weeks. I have felt that we've accomplished what we agreed to start to do here. That was not have an inquisition, but to get a new perception on all of our part of some of these things. And the next step was to be the employment situation, if we're to carry out what we said.
Right.
Not put people on the spot, but to bring them in, expose them, get some of their ideas, that would be, seems to me, the next step.
All right, then I think we ought to clarify one point. When the,
if we talk about employment, we're doing the same way as we're doing today. Mm. We're not bringing them in here to take them across the coast, is that okay. correct? We're bringing them in here to be exposed to the concerns of now the minority perceptions versus the majority perceptions, but specifically with a minority bus driver, minority ticket agent, etc. Is this correct so far?
Well, let them write it down while they're up there, just like Attorney Butler did, write it down on the setup this morning. Let them do likewise, and then we'll take off from
there. So we'll take employment next with the transit company. Mike?
Carol, by the time we meet next time, we will have at least one new councilman elect, either Mr. Lofton or Mrs. Thackeray. It might be good to invite whichever one of them wins on November 7th. And if any of the rest of us are turned out of office, whoever is the councilman elect or the mayor elect is still a councilman. But I would recommend we invite them because they are going to be wrestling with these problems for the next 4 years. Also, as a matter of efficiency and economy, I appreciate if you wouldn't send me my note of special delivery. It hurts me to see 35 cents. I get it the same day regular mail.
Hey, Judge
Carol?
Yes.
Brent Lofty's point was well taken here, and I didn't mean to kind of run away from it and saying what can we do about it, because basically it was pointed out here within the receiving the money from the federal government that there is reaction that can be taken regardless that there is no move here. That doesn't mean the minority representatives cannot move, because we have a legal action that can be taken based upon not including minorities against on the board and in the employment system, but we're trying to prevent these types of actions so that the right procedure can be taken in the first place. So there is a recourse that we have. It's not necessarily with this board.
All right. Thank you for coming. 2 weeks from today.
Sure.
No, I think we are.